Thank you.
No, you're good. All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Darren. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 16, 2018. My home group is Fellowship of the Spirit. We're based out of Ventnor City, New Jersey. So if anybody comes down to the South Shore, please come see us. We meet on Wednesday nights at 7:30. We are a big book breakdown study. We go through this book. Usually takes about 10 months to a year to go from doctor's opinion to the end of 164. I was invited up here, which I'm truly grateful for, a couple weeks ago for the new faces, to walk through the steps. As my experience has shown me and my studying of this book have given me. You are here for the what I consider the, for me, the steps that I, for one, have to live in, to absolutely enjoy. That would be 8 and 9 with amends, 10, 11, and 12, right? 10 is a beautiful culmination of basically 4 through 9. 11 is the continued growth, cultivation, and developing of a relationship, a conscious contact, right? Not just prayer, but a personal relationship that I feel, that I can feel, right? As I was sitting here during that meditation, I had said it just a simple little prayer right before, and that was, God, fire my spirit. Never said that before in my life. I don't know, just came to me, and as that meditation started, I started vibrating. Right, this is the power that we are given when we go through this process and continue and get to be a part of things like this. Right, and the 12th step, which, oh man, there's nothing greater in my life than to be able to sit across the table from an individual, knee to knee, eye to eye, trying to lay this spiritual toolkit at their feet. You know, early on, I wanted all of them to pick it up. But unfortunately, that is not my job. That is alcohol's job. Alcohol's job is designed to make the alcoholic recognize that they need a power greater than themselves. Right? And when it's done whooping that ass, that's where my willingness comes from, to bend over and pick up that spiritual toolkit, right? So, 8 and 9, I'm going to pull a few things out of the book. I have a ton of amends that I've made. If you weren't here for the first couple weeks, then you missed out on some of the lovely descriptions of the type of harm I cause, which I do, right? And I can still do that today. There is a difference. I don't wait 30 years to clean it up. It says, step 10 talks about immediately. Sometimes immediately is that day, that hour. Sometimes it's a week or two, depending on how long it takes for me to get shifted out of that justifiable anger I may be living in. So, it says, we have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. And it says we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. And that's on page 76. So they're letting me know that that inventory I took is satisfying two roles there. One for me to walk through a fourth and a fifth step with my sponsor. The other one is to turn those names into amends. Right? Everybody on my sex conduct was on my amends list. Obviously, everybody on the harms list was as well. And I'm going to say about 95% of the people on the resentment list have received an amends. The other 5% we're still working on. But the big thing is there is the willingness. I was sharing with a young man that I sponsored the other day. Him and a young lady have had a tumultuous relationship, to say the least. He has finally gotten to a point of willingness to make an amends to this young lady. But I said, listen, you pray and meditate on that thought, and I'm going to pray and meditate on that thought, and we're going to reconvene tomorrow, and let's see what God may have brought to you and to me. And the first thing I got that morning, because I asked at the end of my nightly inventory, right? Because it talks about some corrective measures at the end of our nightly inventory. And see, I've received I've received things while I've been sleeping. And that may sound weird, but do I believe God's power is that power? Yes, absolutely. Right? And I woke up that morning and I started to get ready to go into meditation, and I reminded myself to say it, and the first thing that came was willing but may not be necessary at this moment, may not be ready. Right? Whether that be him or her. See, I don't know about her, him, we're going to talk about. Me and him would talk about, right? And I called him and we were chit-chatting. I said, well, listen, I believe willingness is the key ingredient here. Does not mean you need to make it today. And he said, absolutely. I realized this morning that emotionally I'm ill-equipped to handle what this amends may look like just yet. And I said, perfect, you're willing. Right? And that seems to be the key. I had a young man that I worked for down in Florida. And my idea of what an amends was going to look like was, I'm sorry. And then I was going to throat punch him if he did not return the amends in kind. Right? That is what I felt. That's where I was at in willingness, and that wasn't very much. But God do what God do. And I prayed, and I continued to ask for this willingness, and I did some inventory. And come to find out, the inventory that I did was not on him, it was on situations. And I'm driving to work one day thinking about this, because I'm getting ready to go to Florida to make that amends trip, right? Because that's what the step says. It says wherever possible. Wherever. Not whenever. Whenever, I would never. I would just never go. I wouldn't do these things. I'd be like, oh, that random person in Naples is just going to show up in Ventnor, New Jersey. And then when they do, that'll be God showing me. No, I don't believe that's how this is intended. I believe I have action to take in this process. So I do all these things, and I'm driving to work one day doing what a good alcoholic does, thinking. And what I come up with is I recognize that the conversation that I'm having no longer involves the throat punch. And it really just involves my side. And I went, oh my God. And I freaked me out because I've had this for a while. Right? This was harm caused back in 2005. So I've had lots of thinking about this one. Right? And I recognized, holy cow. Man, they weren't lying. Right? Willingness. So I got down to Florida and I was able to sit down with that man in a restaurant that me and him created that was now big and blossoming. And I drive for a rehab, right? And I was not one bit jealous. I was not upset. I was truly, truly happy for this man and what he had been able to accomplish, you know. And the amends was beautiful. And he pointed out, hey, listen, maybe you might want to reach out to my brother. He was a part of the opening crew that we did when we got this restaurant up and running. And being open-minded and then spiritually fit at that time, I recognized, you know what, it's a good idea. So I just reached out to that young man a couple, maybe last week, because I'm going back down to Florida on another trip. And this is how God works in my life. I was supposed to go down to Florida, I don't know, 8 months ago. It was a design trip. I was going to go down there, had an Airbnb, was going to make some amends, right? Money got a little tight. My living arrangements changed, and I was going to have to start being self-supporting. Right? This was a whole seven tradition in my life action, right? And I had to be self-supporting, which I had not had to be. A good friend of mine had allowed me to live with him. And now that was going to change. And I had to cancel that trip. And God does what he does, right? And what he did was, I get a phone call from a man that I don't know, asking, saying that he had a friend of ours that had told him I might be willing to drive a vehicle down to Florida for him. And he would pay me such and such money. And I said, well, that's definitely a possibility. Where do you need the car taken? He said, oh, I need it brought to Fort Myers. My amends are in Fort Myers. My amends are in Naples, which is 40 minutes south of there. Right? And I get a little extra coin in my pocket to go down, make those amends, and come back. I don't turn it into the little vacation that I had planned earlier with the Airbnb and right off of Naples Beach, right? And a nice little cozy thing where I get to happen to go make an amends to some dude. No, I go, I drive the car down there. I make the amends. I drop the car off. I Uber to the airport. I fly home. Right? This was strictly a God trip. He just recently called me and said, it's time for the car to come home. So, guess what I get to do? I get to fly down to Florida. I get to pick that car up. I get to go make a couple more amends, and I get to drive that car home. So God does for me what I cannot do for myself. I can't afford these trips, but I'm willing. Right? And God seems to make things appear as, man, it just blows my mind what has happened. Right, so they discuss a few different types of amends in this book, right? Some of them are the direct amends, right? There's relationships they talk about where sometimes we need to approach from the flank, right? Meaning I don't want to go express to my ex-wife that I had slept with her best friend after I have caused serious harm to her already when she doesn't know these things. I have already rubbed this woman's face in the mud for 13 years. Is it something that I need to go just so I can unburden myself? No, the book gives me directions. It says we approach this, attack this from the flank, meaning I arrive with a list of my character flaws, a relationship with God, and I sit down and I talk to this young woman, and I express all of the things that I did from where I was at. Not the things directly. There was thousands of things. She was with me for 13 years, 14 years. And there's no use in rehashing all of that. It talks about financial amends. I come into this program with $40,000 in debt, an undetermined amount that the IRS may or may not know about. I would find out shortly after that they did know about some of it. Because I get accountants that tell me that they can get me this amount back. Like they guarantee that. So that's the kind of accountant I get, right? And come to find out she's a criminal, which I could have easily found out had I have Google searched her. But I didn't, because I don't want to know things like that. I want that money that you said you could get me. Well, the IRS found out, and they weren't happy, and they wanted that money back, right? And like they say, it's not my money, it's their money. It looks like my money because it's in my bank, right? It looks like my money because I could write a check against it, but it's not. It's theirs. So what I have to do, I set up the best plan possible, right? That's what the book suggests. We make the best plan available for ourselves, right? So I do that. And then I get in touch with all of the creditors that have been dumb enough to lend a gentleman like me money. Bank of America was the dumbest. They lent me $18,000. That was my first credit card. That made no sense to me, but it was really enjoyable when I took the wife to Europe on that card. That's how I save marriages and relationships. I take you to Europe. This is going to be great. It's going to be amazing. It didn't go that way. I can promise you that it did not. I left her in the middle of Rome in the middle of the night. Things like that. I won't go any farther. That'll give you enough understanding of the type of individual I was. So I reach out to all of these creditors, as the book would suggest. I express to them what I was going through, what had happened, and this is what I can afford to pay. Are y'all cool with that? And everybody was cool. And then Bank of America stopped being cool and they wanted more. I didn't have it. So I had to take the next step, and that was to keep me from getting buried and not being available to be useful to others, right? And that was the thing that my sponsor kind of guided me on, was that, right? And I ended up having to file bankruptcy to get out of some of that. But that doesn't take care of my personal debts that I owe to people, right? I reach out to my last roommate that I had at the end of a 30-year run. This man allowed me to live with him for a year. It was torture for him. It was brutal. The things that I allowed to go on in that house were just very unhealthy for anyone, especially an individual that's not like me. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, listen, I was going to come to Florida. I'd like to sit down with you and have a little chit chat. Now, at the time, I hadn't talked to him in a while. He says, okay. And I was like, well, that didn't sound very exciting. Figured he would be really excited to see me so I could tell him all the good things that I've done. Right? I'm sober. And I'm ready to be, you know, a better person. Right? And I get back at okay. And I'm like, ah, man, that's just not doing for my ego what I was hoping. And he would reach out 3 days later. Now I found out why it was just with an okay. And he goes, actually, I've decided, I think you're a piece of shit. You owe me $3,000. I'm pretty sure you slept with my girlfriend. And I'd probably never want to talk to you again. Now I was really hurt because I had grandiose plans. You were ruining, first off, my trip to Florida. And now I don't even get to make the amends while I happen to be there. And so I reach out to my sponsor, and, you know, like a good sponsor, I'm like, I don't understand why. Why would he say these things? And he said, did you sleep with his girlfriend? I said, no. He said, are you sure? I said, yes, absolutely. He said, do you own the $3,000? I said, I have no idea. I'm a blackout drunk. I have no idea. I don't know what goes on when I leave places, who comes back into my places. Come to find out, I guess the ex had come back in, caused damage. He had told me never to allow her to be there. I'm guessing I misunderstood what he meant. And she did damage to the place. And he said, do you believe that you owe $3,000? I said, he's a pretty honest dude. He said, all right, well, this is what you're going to do. You're going to reach out. You're going to set up a payment plan. You're going to start paying him back immediately. And if God sees fit, you'll get a chance to sit down with that young man one day and really clean this up. Last year, not even last year, 6 months ago, I got to do that. And after I paid him his money back, this is a beautiful thing. This is what this is the power of amends. About halfway through this $3,000 payment, he reaches out and says, I don't know what's going on in these rooms you're going to, this AA thing you got going on. He goes, but I had to see, so I took a friend who has a drinking problem. So I started giving him rides to meetings so that he could maybe experience what you're experiencing. Right? Blew my mind. I was like, wow. You know, that's powerful. I was almost done paying him back. And he sent me a picture, like three of them, of a car. And he said, because of you and what you've done to give me back this money, I've been able to make a down payment on the car I've always wanted. And I want to thank you for that. I said, I don't get that. And he goes, and listen, anytime you ever come to Florida, you look me up. We'll get together. Last time when I left, he said, anytime you come to Florida, you stay with me. See, that's what's available to us. Right? I want to act like I get to go out and just mark some names off of a list. And we get to shift people's lives. We get to create a ripple effect that I have no idea who it touches. Absolutely no idea who it touches. But I know that if I just am willing, the stuff that I get to experience is beyond anything I could imagine. Right? They talk about a life beyond my wildest dreams. You want to know why it's beyond my wildest dreams? Because this isn't the shit I dream about. Not until I got here. Certainly not before. I can promise you that. If I want to say I've had a spiritual awakening, but I'm unwilling to make amends because my list is extensive, I had a sponsor who understands the way this book is, and that is, it states as we continue through this, we move into 10, 11, and 12, right? So I make a few amends and we move into 10, right? But if I get to step 12 and I want to claim to have had a spiritual awakening as step 12 offers me and states that I will have, promises me, but I'm unwilling to make amends, you sure that spirit's awoken? Are you sure? That kind of still sounds like I'm living in selfishness, self-centeredness, self-absorbed. And it doesn't sound like there's been a whole lot of awakening going on. Mark Houston used to talk about being asleep, dreaming you're awake. Being in your sleep, dreaming you're awake. But I can't see it. I'm delusional when I get to states like that, right? I'm going to tell you one of the most... This amends changed my life. Literally changed my life. tried to make some amends to my father. For those who have been here, they know a little bit of the history. And for the, my boys and young lady right here, they know my story. At 13, I was sitting at the top of the stairs ready to kill my father. I had a gun waiting for him to get home from work. He used to beat me and my mom. Things like that, right? I hated this man. But this book was clear to me. And it was expressed clearly to me about what I needed to do. And that was, is I owed an amends to him. And I tried to make him without really bringing God into the program. You know, they give us cute little prayers in here, right, of how we invite God in right before this. I didn't do that. I tried to, like, I just tried to make it happen. And both times, they were shifted away. One time, it turned into my dad asking me to help him, which turned into a whole cool little father-son experience. And the other time, it just turned into whatever we were doing at that moment. It became clear to me that I needed to involve my mom. My dad had had a stroke, suffered from asphyxia. Physically, he's fine. Asphyxia means the words come in. They don't really make sense. They come out. They don't really make sense. So it's, imagine the challenge that it's going to be trying to make an amends to this man. But I called my mom. I said, listen, I'm going to be down this weekend. I want to sit down with dad. I need to make an amends. She knew what that meant because I'd made my amends with her, right? And I go into a room next door. He goes into the room. My mom gets him set, tries to explain to him. I go into a room and I sit down and I hit what they would call like a bow, right? It was more than just on my knees. I was in a bow position because that was what I was brought to in the idea that I wanted this man to be a part of this. I felt he deserved it. He was getting older. I wanted him to be relieved of some of the burden that he carried as a man who had done the harms that he had done. And I wanted him to understand that that's not why I'm an alcoholic. And so on and so forth. Right? And I just kept asking God, please just let him be a part of this. And I go into the room and I start to express my regrets and the harmful actions that I took as a son that caused damage to him and my mother's relationship, to the family dynamic. See, because I'm a mama's boy. Mom protected me. Dad was like, he'll either figure it out or he won't. My sister felt very similar. So there was a big pushback in the family dynamic. I stole his peace of mind because of that. And all of these things that I did to their relationship and to our relationship. I couldn't be a son. When he had the stroke down in Florida, I showed up to the hospital pretty lit up and continued like that pretty much every time I did come in there. So I go in and I start making this amends to this man. And I start watching this man cry. Right? These words were making sense to him. Right? This is a man who grew up in Southeast D.C. Not exactly an emotional man unless it's anger. And you could tell that it was making sense. And he was starting to understand what I was trying to express to him. He was really understanding what was going on. And then he shared a couple of stories from his childhood that he had never shared with me. And they were clear. And they were concise. There was no struggling with the talks. There was nothing. And we got up at the end of that amends and we hugged. And I really want to tell you that I wish that I could tell you that the relationship was beautiful from that moment on. It was not. This man caused harm. Right? I had done my job. We had had a moment. And I had more work to do, which meant I had more inventory to write on this, and I had to get a little freer. Today, that relationship is beautiful, right? But that changed my life. Because what happened was, is that idea of hope, faith, trust. Trust was the only word left at that point. Because what I watched was a power greater than me work through a physical issue in a man to allow him to be part of it. Because that
was what I had asked for. Are you kidding me? And we want to act like this is just about not drinking. It's about so much more. Right? Emotional sobriety is an amazing thing. And that's what we get to be a part of, is emotional sobriety. Right? And that's what we got going on in these steps. 6 and 7 is the opening of the door to that. 8 and 9, Earl H. talks about this is the first step where we get to leave the house. Right? We get to go outside the house. We get to go out and be in the public. Right? So those are just a few little things about some of the amends, right? Personal. I've written plenty of letters. The young man that committed suicide sitting next to me, I wrote a letter to him. Right? You want to know why? Because I dragged his name through the mud. I blamed him for the next 20-some years to everybody I could that he was the reason why I was an alcoholic. I sat down in a park and I wrote a letter to that young man. And the book says, we write an honest letter to those who can't be seen. Right? And I've got a book of those because there's a bunch of people that don't want to see me. Right? So what's my level of willingness? My level of willingness is to go all the way until it's right before the direct amends. And what to me that is that letter. Because I believe that this goes out into the universe. I've had people reach out to me shortly after writing them a letter when previously they would not respond. You can't tell me this ain't that powerful, man. You can't. Right? These are my experiences. Right? So, if you're anywhere near the amends process, please look at the beauty that is available. If you're sitting on some amends, look at the beauty that is available to you in this step. And all it takes is some willingness, right? So you have the lovely 9-step promises. I find it funny. They get all the hype, right? They get all the hype. They're like laminated and stuff and like read at all the meetings. I think they're awesome. I really do. But there's so many promises in this book. I have a young lady who I seek guidance from. Her name is Alice. If you ever have a chance to see her speak, whether it be on Zoom or live, please, please do that. She talks about the idea of 250 or so, 250 plus promises in this book, right? This will be the last I speak on amends, but these are the ones that, see if I can find it. These are two that come right after one another, and I find these to be pretty powerful, and you never really hear about them. It's on page 78, at the right before the start of the first real paragraph. It says, if our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Very simple, very to the point, but a beautiful promise to me. I'll be satisfied, and the unexpected will happen. So, it says on page 84, after it gets done with those 9-step promises, it said, this thought brings us to step 10. Actually, I'm going to backtrack a sentence. It says, they will always materialize. What they're referencing is the promises, the 9-step promises, if we work for them. This thought, which thought? That if we work for them. So here we go, right? This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past, and there's the timeline on when I start doing step 10 versus where I'm at in my amends. As we. It's a continuation statement, meaning as I continue to do this, I will receive these things, right? It's in the 3rd step promises. It says, as we, right? And what that means is as every time I turn and allow that God's will to enter my life, those things happen, right? So that we separate any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. And then here's step 10. In the nutshell, it says continue to watch. So the first part of step 10 is to watch. What am I watching for? selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. And it says, when these crop up, what does that mean? They're going to. Right. When? It's just depending on when I get spiritually unfit. They're going to crop up. What do I do when they crop up? I ask. So far, two things that this book is telling me to do in step 10 is to watch for them and then to ask. So that's a prayer. So I ask God to remove them. We discuss them. So now I have watch, ask, discuss. I discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we turn. So I have watch, ask, discuss, make the amends, turn my thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now, I always miss this. It doesn't say we do something. It says we turn our thoughts. That is how simple this works for me. I don't even really have to do anything physically. I just turn my thoughts and it works. How easy. Man, we want to sit here and make this more challenging than it is, right? I talk about Mark Houston a lot. If you ever listen to him, when I first listened to him, wow, was it painful. He was a very intense individual about this. But there are some things I took away from him. If you ever have a chance, listen to his 10th and 11th step talk, possibly one of the greatest talks that I've ever heard. And he talks about the idea of meditating on those five thoughts. Spending a couple weeks on each idea. I'm not suggesting that, nor would I claim to have done it. But I do think it's a pretty cool thought to have, the idea of what is watching. Can I be in front of the ball? Or am I always playing from behind the ball? Right? Am I allowing frustration to grow into resentment? Because I'm watching it, and I watch it happen. Or am I watching it and then following the next direction, which is I ask God to remove this. Right, frustration to resentment. That's how it works in me. I start to get a little frustrated with you, and if I'm fit, I'm in front of it. Boom, God, get these thoughts away. Right, got to go through the rest of the process, and I'm good. The idea of it growing in understanding and effectiveness. We went down to a men's retreat recently, and that was the concept. Of the men's retreat was to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And some of the things that we did down there was do inventory as a group, do inventory with strangers, pray and meditate as a group, have talks, panel talks, where they would bring a topic to, right? I walked away from that a different person. The inventory structure alone shifted me. But one of the things we heard down there was the idea of having a 10-step little call list, right? So we put together a little, like six or seven of us, where you could shoot out a text, like in a group chat, say, hey, anybody got time for a 10-step? Right? Sandy Beach used to talk about that a lot. I don't think they had group chats when he was alive. But what a great idea, right? And it's simple. We throw a little text out there. Who's got a minute for a group? Who's got a minute for a 10-step? Right? Someone will respond. Make a phone call. You say, all right, this is what I got. Da-da-da-da-da. This person, they did this. Two things happen. That individual gets to tell me my truth because I've given them spiritual consent. Two, I get to hear how stupid I sound out loud, which seems to be really pertinent in situations like this. Because usually by the time I'm finished saying it, I go, you know what? Wow, that really sounded stupid. I still give them because they may still have a little bit more of an in-depth perspective, right? And we get free of this, right? And that is the simplicity of 10, right? That is it. That is it right there. What that looks like in action is that I get done doing a drive. I show up. The lady at the front desk at my job is an older woman. Not really understanding of what it's like to spend 2 hours, 2.5 hours in a vehicle with someone who's either really high or really drunk. And the pressure that comes upon that. as I got to make sure that this person doesn't go into overdose or whatever it is. Right? So she doesn't quite get that. So I walk in the door and she immediately has 20 questions for me, right, about books, names, da 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 da, and I snap on it. Right, and I storm back out because I'm justified. I grab the dude and go inside. And she's like, "Damn!" And I'm boom, and I'm gone. Woman, getting on my damn nerves. And by the time I get around to the other side of the building, I'm in spiritual pain, and I go, "Son of a man, I got to go back and make an amends to this woman." I don't want to because I'm not her biggest fan. But the book says the things that we gain from making an amends to the people that we don't like, the word says hate. That's a powerful word. The book says hate. Right? I don't hate her, but still gives me the idea. I got to put the bit between my teeth. Right? Now, I didn't understand what the bit between the teeth meant. I thought it had something to do with the thing they put in the horse's mouth. Right? Which it does. I didn't realize it's the thing that they put in the horse's mouth so that they can be guided. See, I didn't get that part. See, guided by what? God. So, I go back around as I'm walking, because I could have drove, but I'm like, no, I need to walk this out. I walk back around, I walk in the door, there's nobody in the lobby. I say, "Young lady, could you give me a minute?" And I pull her aside and I tell her my actions. I regret them. I shouldn't speak to a human being that way, and I promise I will never speak to you that way again. See, because an amends without change of action is manipulation. Right? Amends is to mend, meaning to repair this relationship. And that's what I do. And if I continue to take the same action over and over after making an amends, that is not an amends. Period. That is what I used to do. I'm sorry. I'm never going to do that again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry this time. I mean it. Right? That's not, they don't want to hear that crap. They don't. They heard it from me 1,000 times. It's time to be different. Right? So, step 11 gives us clear-cut directions as well, right? It says when we retire at night, right? We constructively review our debt. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or are we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? Right? Now, today we have so many things that make this an easy practice. You have a little phone that you can download a free app on. You pay a little extra and you can send out your nightly inventory. Spiritual toolkit. Right, and it goes in, and it gives you some prayers as well, and it gives you the questions, and you can da-da-da-da-da, and you can email them or text them to it, right? So we have an 11-step text group, right, that we all send our inventory to. I also have guys that I sponsor that aren't a part of that group send it to me as well. And what that does, and I send mine, right, because I've given you spiritual consent to be in my life, to take a look at me, and tell me my truth. I need that. I need to hear my truth because I can't see the picture when I'm in the picture. Right? I have to have people that help me with this. So every night, right? Regardless of what time I get home, and trust me, I have fallen asleep sitting quietly seeking guidance because this is how I do my inventory. I say, "God, please help me see my day. I can't see it through my eyes. Can you show me my truth about my day?" And I sit quietly and I let my day unfold inside of my mind. Now that requires me closing my eyes. Well, after 18-hour days, sometimes that is not going to be a picture of my day. It's going to be me sleeping. Right? So what happens? I wake up 20 minutes later. I'm like, "Wow, what a powerful meditation." Yeah, I'm just kidding. And I start over. I say, "God, please help me see my day," right? And I sit there and I allow my day to unfold, right? And I'm like, boom, oh, man, I forgot about that. Boom, oh, my, just, oh. I had my day marked down for like a 95%. I'm like, killing it. But that's through my eyes, right? Because I'm going to round the edges off. I'm going to make my day look beautiful. wasn't that bad. Wasn't even that bad. No, God will show me. And he does. Right? And I go through and I answer those questions honestly. And I pinpoint all of my grosser handicaps. And then at the end, after making some red marks on my day, they give me the opportunity to see where God was in my life today. Right? And that is the last question. Right? Were we thinking of what we could pack into the stream of life? And what that looks like to me is all the things that I would not do based on my power. Instead, the things that I do in a day based on the power that God inspires in me. Meaning, anything that looks selfless. Because I'm going to tell you what, those aren't things I do under my power. I'm selfish, self-centered. Right? That's the root of my troubles. So, that is where I get to get a little relief from the red marks, and I get to put a nice couple green marks on there. Right? And then it tells me we need to be careful. Right? Don't want to slip into remorse, morbid reflection, drift into worry. Right? It says, why? For then we would diminish our usefulness to others. And all those three words, what they remind me of, self-pity. Look at what a bum I was today. Blah. Instead of being able to see that I was just human, flawed, and okay with that. And what it looks like when I run on my own power versus what it looks like when I run on God's power. Right? And then it says, after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Do I think he's going to give me that answer right that moment? I hope not, because I plan on going to bed. What I'm hoping is that throughout the night, perhaps, or perhaps in my next morning, I will receive some clarity and perhaps some additional guidance on how to be better today than I was yesterday. Right? And then it's nice, because then I wake up and guess what? Upon awakening, it gives me clear-cut directions there too, right? And I can read that from the middle of 84, what is it, middle of 86 to the end of 88. It gives me a nice little healthy reading with a handful of little prayers. It gives me an idea of what meditation looks like. Right? I love the way Bob D. explains it. He said, you know, I don't see where they talk about meditation, because when I come in here, he's done transcendental. He's done all these forms of Americanized or Eastern forms of meditation. And he says, do you think Bill and Bob were sitting around with a chime bowl and a burning sage with candles? I was, no, I don't. I really don't. I don't see those two guys being involved in that. Not that it's not useful, but it was expressed to me by an old timer on a tape who was a part of the writing of this, Jim Burrell. Burrell? No, it doesn't matter. Who talked about the idea, what they wanted you to have was something that could be useful throughout your day. If you needed to step out of your office and into the bathroom so that you could get connected and take a minute or two, that's what meditation was designed to do. So, he pointed out a few little things here. It says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for an inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax, take it easy, we don't struggle. That is what he described as what meditation is. This is, we present God with a question. Right? It's kind of similar to the idea of pause when doubtful, when angry or doubtful. Except this is a little more in depth. Right? So I present God with a few things. I don't know what's going on with my day today. I seem like I have 1,000 things. Can you please help me see what is useful to me today? And then I sit quietly with that. And it was expressed to me that a lot of times back in the day, they would write down their list of what the day looked like the night before. So when they woke up, they would read that and then sit quietly with that. I don't do that, but it sounds beautiful. Love it. Great idea. But I do like this idea of the simplicity of meditation. Because I can turn it into something that my ego and mind will consistently either tell me it was amazing or that it was horrible.
right? And it's neither one. It is a practice. I believe the discipline of sitting by itself is impressive for an alcoholic of my type. I don't know about y'all, but sitting still for 10, 15, 20 minutes, that's where I'm at today. Before it was 3 to 5, right? Sitting still and just practicing, trying to not grab onto every thought that goes by and jumping on it, right? And I've done some weird stuff too, right? I really have. I did meditation with the metronome, right? And you could turn it real slow, so it was like a beat every 10 seconds, right, over a minute. Or I would turn it to 180 and see if I could get my mind to slow down. This is how powerful the mind was, is as I was able to shut out the metronome and have clear, concise thoughts. That's how crazy. That's not healthy, by the way. That is an alcoholic mind being able to just disregard everything. Right, I've done the little chimes and the bowls and stuff like that. You can find all this stuff on YouTube, right? And I was beating myself up a lot, and that's when I started seeking, as this book would say, as step 11 is about, right? Seeking. It's not about finding. Seeking. And I started listening to some old timers talk about meditation, and they started talking about those couple sentences, and I thought, wow, perhaps I've found something that's a little more feasible for an alcoholic of my type. Right. Seems to work pretty well today. It says we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer. So now I pray, I meditate, and I pray. Right? What a great morning start. The crazy thing about that is I can walk out the door, be Dalai Lama, get to the corner, get cut off in traffic, and owe an amends. Right? It is no guarantee that I am going to be able to control these emotional natures. These steps are not designed to keep me from having emotion. They are designed to get me out of them so that I don't have to live in them. That is where the danger lies for an alcoholic like me, is the fact that I want to live in them. So that is the beauty of 10 and 11, and also 12, because there's the prayer, meditation, and service, right? I do not share this to pat myself on the back. I share it to show you the power of God, and also to let you know that this is how sick I am. I sponsor a lot of guys, and I need to. About every 2 months, I make statements like, you know what, I think I'm going to really slow down on the sponsoring thing and get a little closer to the guys I've got, you know, start creating bonds, like real bonds and be buddies. And usually by the time I finish that sentence, the phone is ringing. And by the next day, there's 3 new people standing at the door asking for help. And I'm like, but God, I could have sworn we had this all figured out. I was going to take a little break, relax this week. You remember? Were you not at this meeting? And I just recently said it, so I'm waiting. I just recently said it because I'm tired. Right? You get beat up a little bit. Right? There's a handful of speakers that I listen to that talk about the idea that 5% do 95%. And that is not to offend anybody. It is just been their experience. And it's my experience in our area. There's a gentleman, a couple of these individuals sitting here that came up with me that know that to be true in our area. A few of us sponsor a lot, right? We do a lot of group step work where we'll get together and we'll bring in the new guy, and then we'll bring somebody a couple months more than him, and a couple months more than him, and a couple months more than him, and then a guy, and then me, if it's my guy, or vice versa, depending on whose sponsee it is, right? And we sit down and we start going over these steps. And they start to build a community right there on the spot. Because this guy sounds... See, because sometimes I get going. If I wasn't being taped, and I didn't have this mic in my face, I'd be speaking really fast.
It's just what happens. You can ask anybody. I start getting on a roll, and I'm off. And it's like, and I'm gone. And the newcomer will just gloss over and start to look like he's going into a coma, right? And we need some guys there that can speak a little better language, something that might sound like he might have just had a drink a couple months ago, right? And so that's what we do. We get these guys, and we group them up, and we've done a 10-person third-step prayer in our living room, holding hands while the new guy reads the prayer. Man, you want to talk about powerful. You want to talk about buzzing. Ooh, it is beautiful. I've watched a guy just last week in the middle of this have a whole new third step experience. He wasn't the new guy. He was one of the other guys, had a whole new third step experience on the spot. Shook. He was shook. It was amazing. Right? We do a lot of work down there. We're just trying to leave an imprint. We're trying to make... Book talks about we build a community we crave, right? The reason why we're referred to as Fellowship of the Spirit is because if you turn to page 164, it says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. There are two fellowships. There's this fellowship right here. All of us individuals. And then there's the fellowship of the Spirit. If you read that paragraph slowly, you'll recognize, man, that kind of sounds like the brief description of the steps. Certainly sounds like the six tenements that they used as their initial version of the steps, right? If you're not a history person, you should really dive into our history. It is amazing, powerful stuff. Where this came from, the amount of God required for this to all come together. The idea of Dr. Silkworth, Carl Jung, and the Oxford group somehow touching lives that all came together so that Bill and Bob one day could be sitting in the kitchen. So that Bill and Bob could one day be sitting in the kitchen doing something that would save a hopeless drunk like me one day, so that perhaps, maybe, I could leave an imprint somewhere. You got to be kidding me. You can't make this shit up. You can't. Please look at our history. It's amazing, powerful stuff. Right? The one piece of history that I incorporate and I try to share it with people is the idea of two-way prayer. If you haven't heard of it, they do some Zoom stuff. Father Bill Wilson, as funny as that is, 52 years sober. So back in between 34 and 39. The Oxford group had what they called a two-way prayer. It was a form of prayer and meditation involving writing. And what you do was present a question at the top of the page, write it out, and then write, Dear Child. Meaning, you were getting ready to write a letter to yourself inspired through God from within you. With answers to that question. And then you would attach the four absolutes to it to determine where and what was you and what was God. You don't have to go through it that way. You can clearly see most of the time, at least in my experience, what is God talking and what is my ego talking. But it is a powerful power. I have gotten more clarity, and it's allowed me to develop a closer, deeper relationship with God because of that. Because it feels from inside. And if you don't believe that this could be possible, where do you think your inventory came from? Where do you think these letters of amends have come from? From within. And if you're asking God to help you do those things, how is it really any different? Right? If anybody has any questions about that, you can come up to me afterwards. But that was something that AA had. And until the Oxfords received some bad press over some statements made by the two gentlemen that ran the Oxford group, that was a part of our history. We did that. It was taught. It was shown, and is now made somewhat of a little bit of a comeback, especially in the Zoom era. because of the history involved in the Zoom meetings that we've gotten to do, the big book, right? It's kind of hard to do discussion meetings on Zoom. You have to kind of do big book or speaker, so a lot of this stuff has come back up. You should check it out. Says, practice these principles in all of my affairs. Right? I'm a son today. I'm a boyfriend. I'm an uncle. I'm a brother. I'm an employee. I try to be a kind, loving individual to the people I walk in, that I come across in my life. It says, were we kind and loving to all? It's a big word. That answer for me every day is no. Am I expanding the box that I live in to include all? It's impossible for a drunk like me. Just like am I selfish? Yes. Every day. There's not been a day that I've not answered that question with a yes. If I am not selfish for a whole day, I don't know what that would look like. I don't. I'm an alcoholic of the real variety. And that is what I am driven by. I wish I had time to talk a little bit about those three chapters, but I'm going to let you know the ones to wives, to employers, and the family afterwards. These are the way I express them, not just in our meeting, but to some of the sponsees, and any time I get to talk about it. A couple things about them. One, they are a great tool as a sponsor to approach my sponsees with on how to look at amends to the individuals that those chapters cover. It's a great way to look at the relationship with your significant other when you look at two wives and see the harm that is caused. It's a great tool as a sponsor to practice these principles in all of my affairs. And that is how I see those chapters. They are powerful. They are a challenge to break down in a big book study, especially to wives. That is a very challenging chapter if you come at it from an angle that it was unintended. All of those chapters are intended to come at from an angle of willingness to be a part of. Right? To wives was with the intention of the wife wanting to stay. The family wanting to be a part of. Right? These were not designed for wives who were walking out the door. Right? And unfortunately that chapter was written by Bill, which is hysterical. He actually asked Ann Smith first. She denied it. And instead of asking his wife, he said, you know what, I got a great idea. I'll write this chapter myself. And we would act like Bill doesn't have an ego. I can write this chapter better than my wife. I think Bill was very concerned about what Lois might have had to say. We got that book. I've always heard the joke, you know, the idea of as Bill sees it versus as Lois lived it. Yeah. Right? Bill was very gentle on himself and to wives. And he set it up pretty beautiful for us guys. He really did. But if you understand that chapter, it is powerful. It is a powerful tool as a sponsor and as an individual who had to turn around and go make an amends to the young ladies in my life that I caused harm to. That's all I got. Thank y'all.